Hello and welcome back to another episode of Brain Fart. Your host, Todd Tariq. I'm back again. We're doing another episode. And yeah, we're getting back on the grind. We're easing back into it. And if you haven't heard the podcast before, it's just an extended rant. I usually have some notes prepared, which I do today, and I just go and talk about whatever I want. There's no editing. This is just how it is, and it's as raw as that. I hate that I said raw. That sucks. Anyway, we move. So, today's episode, I wanted to talk about the Apple Vision Pro, which is the latest augmented reality headset that Apple has just released, and we're starting to see those videos online about the use cases and about it and all the reviews and such. And it's expensive. It's about $3,500 to $4,000 US, depending on how much, I think, storage you get. But it's very interesting. It's a very interesting device. I think it brings up a lot of questions, and specifically for me, I have always been very interested with this type of technology, and I'll talk a little bit about that later on, but I thought that it would be good to kind of do a little episode on this, because I wanted to capture maybe sort of an obsession. I think one of my childhood obsessions with augmented reality VR. Also, I'm losing my voice, so had like a long week, so we're just rolling with it. I try to speak as loud as I can, but I don't have much volume in my voice, so I'm gonna be as close to the mic as I can. So the Apple Vision Pro is actually not really augmented reality. It's actually more a virtual reality, a VR headset, with pass-through, with the ability to have cameras pointing outwards, and it recreates, you know, it gives you a view of the outside, through the lens. So you're not actually seeing the real world, but you're seeing a video of the real world, you know, kind of a live stream of the real world with content overlaid on top of that. So it's very interesting, because I think the way that I've traditionally thought of AR or augmented reality was kind of a little screen that's like see-through and it overlays information on top. But this accomplishes kind of that same AR headset vibe in a different way, by using cameras. And I think it's a testament to how good cameras are, where like a lot of people are saying that the pass-through is some of the best they've ever seen. And as usual with any Apple product, I'm an Apple product user. I have, you know, an iPad and iPhone, and I use Windows laptops because I actually like to get work done. little jab for the Apple people out there, but yeah, they have to Apple-ify every word. They have to not, you know, they don't say AR or VR or augmented reality, virtual reality. They say spatial computing, which, you know, honestly sounds cooler. So I'm not a hater of it. I just love that they have to create some sort of branding around it. And it distinguishes them from other people in the space. It distinguishes them from other devices, because, you know, they have that patent or copyright on that spatial computing, let's call it. The operating system they're running is a new operating system called Vision OS, which is very exciting. I feel like there's going to be a lot of development. This is really like a first generation device, and I think there's a lot of hype around it in the same way that there was immense hype around the first iPhone. They're also expanding on the idea of spatial audio, which you've already seen if you have set of AirPods. Basically, sound surround system, or surround sound, I should say. So, again, amplifying a lot of terms, but thought I'd say some of them. So, in case you hear them, you might know what's going on. I think some of the cool kind of features we're starting to see is that really that idea of eye tracking and kind of being able to look at things as you don't have a mouse, you don't carry a mouse, but the idea that you look at things and that's how you interact with things in this augmented reality world. And also the idea of gestures, and I think Apple does this really well with making gestures very natural. That makes sense. They always seem to have a natural feeling. I don't know if that's something that they accomplish because of it's very intentional, or because they just create their own unique language for gestures and for common Apple things, and then you kind of get used to it and wired into that ecosystem. But all the reviews say the gestures feel very natural. The reason why I wanted to talk about this is because I keep seeing a lot of videos and content popping up, especially on YouTube. I feel like there's a lot of people who got a hold of these very early, and I think the first video I saw was the MKBHD video where he does like the proper unboxing experience. And I'm a tech nerd at heart, raised by two computer scientists, so of course there's an element of me geeking out when I see new technology, and especially something that I really 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 wanted when I was a kid. I can't explain that enough. But anyway, saw the kind of implementation with having multitasking with your MacBooks and kind of popping your screen out of your laptop screen and having it become a screen of whatever size, having your iMessages, having your, that multitasking ability, and how it feels very seamless according to the reviews again. I don't personally have the device because I am not someone who has $3,500 to $4,000 to just spend on this, especially because I don't think it's as featureful as, the young ver this isn't the young version of me's complete dream where everything is being fulfilled and, Netflix and YouTube and some other applications are not even available on it. You have to watch them through the Safari browser. So for me, there's like a element of this feels like very early, way too early for the common man, such as myself, to even attempt to look at. I feel like it's still very far out of reach. But I continue to watch all the content and enjoy it. The other video I keep saying is the Casey Neistat video, where he had them on for an extended amount of time and kind of showed how weird it is to have screens and content playing while you're out in the city. And I think AR and VR used to be something that you did in your home, and you didn't really you set up in a safe, confined space. He was using that Apple Vision Pro as an outdoor, I don't know, an outdoor device that he's using throughout the city. And I don't know, I also love New York and I used to watch a ton of Casey Neistat back in the day. So for me, whenever I see his videos, there's just an immense amount of nostalgia. But seeing him review the technology in the way that he did, where he's showing kind of living in it, like a continuous operation of it, is weird. I think it throws me off. It definitely makes me feel like we are in the future, and that, you know, things have changed since I was a kid, and, you know, time is not a complete flat circle. The other video I keep seeing, and I'm sure other people also see it if they're nerdy like me and their algorithms are going crazy with showing them this new device, is the F1 demo. I've gotten really into Formula One this past year, and so I keep getting this video of like a Formula One race happening with, like, you know, the cars being tracked on a track, like basically a version of the track is on the table, and like, you know, multiple screens, multiple views, and there it's so cool. And there's that element of that which gets me so excited, because there's a part of me that I think in a lot of ways saw this coming in the future, and I wasn't quite sure as a kid that I would ever be alive to see some of these technologies. And the final video I wanted to talk about was the DIY mechanic, like this guy working on his car, and he has like a tutorial open and on like YouTube, and that might be the Meta Quest 3 though. I think that video is a little bit older, but I thought I'd mention it. Just this idea that you have, like, you're viewing the world through like a live stream with information overlaid on top as like this augmented reality world, which is, I don't know, it's weird. And I've kind of talked a little bit about the history that I have with AR and VR specifically. I think there's an element of my fascination with, there was a TED Talk in 2009. My dad showed me, I was just about 10 years old, and it was the thrilling potential of sixth sense technology by Pranav Mistry. And this sixth sense device became like the number one term in my search history for probably like an extended amount of time, like maybe a year and a half. And then I kept coming back to it. Like, I kept coming back and revisiting it to see if there had been any developments. I think I was like disappointed that he had come on, like Pranav Mistry had come on to do this TED Talk and had talked so highly about this technology and had done this amazing demo. Highly recommend you watch the video. But he had done this video and it was so exciting, and nothing happened. And this is like 2009, right? This is, 15 years ago, you know? This is 15 years ago where this idea of this technology was first shown to me, and it was amazing, and I was so excited because I expected it in like 2 years we're gonna see like all the big companies be developing it, and it just didn't happen. And I think that there was like an element of me that kept checking back in every couple of years to see, but he had this old ass website that like just never updated. I think it updated once and I got excited, but it was just like a slight, you know, change and like saying that he was working on some other things, and it was a whole, like, you know, my dad had shown me the video originally, and it was this idea that you can, you know, it was open source, that you can build the device yourself, this sixth sense device, which was like early versions of AR with like a projector which projected like an image onto a surface, like from your body. And he wore this like ridiculous tie looking thing. And it used like a mobile phone and, you know, early adopter software, like literally like, you know, some jailbroken stuff to basically have like AR. And they like played a game of Pong on the floor and in like a subway or something, or like in a room, or it's just there's specific core memories that I have associated with that technology. And I always had very, very high hopes, like a very optimistic view on this technology. I never saw it as something that was like negative or or, you know, something that shouldn't exist, or, you know, something that might come with complications. I always saw it as just a, you know, uber positive. I was 10 years old, of course. And, but I think, like, now seeing the Apple Vision Pro, seeing, like, I think kind of having that re-emergence of that, like, obsession, which happened for, you know, for years when I was younger, and it would kind of come back, and I'd go into the deep dives and see if it was accessible. And the truth is, like, a lot of that technology had come up when I was a kid, and I just didn't have, like, he said there was, like, $350 worth of stuff that you needed to buy, and then you could make your own, and I just didn't have the stuff, and I wasn't able to, like, convince my parents at the time to purchase these supplies, you know? It was silly. I think, like, it's very early technology, and it was meant to make you, you know, it wouldn't have been as exciting. I think it was more of a toy at that point. But, yeah, that's kind of my history with, like, augmented reality, and I've just kind of followed with this. And I think, like, part of my tech obsessions has definitely been led by that TED Talk that I watched in 2009. But I think seeing that all these videos and seeing, like, the new technology coming up and it finally being something that we are seeing as, you know, regardless of how you cut it, it is commercially viable to the point that Apple has decided to invest, you know, at least a generation one device is now out there. I think that energy did not exist when I was younger at all in any way, shape, or form. But as I've grown, you know, as I've gotten older, and I think a lot of my views and a lot of my ideas have changed, and a lot of things have been relearned and unlearned and, you know, learned. I think there's also a newfound skepticism with this technology, and I think the first thing to think about is just the increasing isolation that technology has kind of led to, and I think it's exacerbated by the pandemic and COVID era. Like, people were just in their homes, and I remember because I just played video games all day, gained a bunch of weight, was in a terrible relationship, and I just kind of, like, sucked it up because that was what was happening at the time. I just hunkered down and I thought this was life, you know, and I really did isolate. I isolated even when people were around me. Like, I isolated into myself to, you know, into technology, to constantly want to be escaped from reality, because reality wasn't exciting at that time. And I think that, like, that escapism is something that this technology offers on, like, a scale that we haven't seen before. And I definitely think that it's going to increase isolation further than we already see it. We already have, like, most of my, you know, like, I love the hybrid work. I have a hybrid work life right now, and it's very good. But I do miss, like, seeing people, and I feel like there's a lot of online connections that you can't replace, like, in-person connection with a person. And I think as technology gets better through, like, AR and VR to host meetings and stuff, it'll connect us better. But I also think it will give people who, you know, we're social beings, our entire history involves evolution, and, you know, cultural evolution is it's all about closeness and how close people got, and, you know, the ideas being exchanged. So it is very interesting to me to see that we're now going down a pathway with technology where we are, you know, instead of embracing that we do need to be surrounded by people, we're finding new ways to connect people and, like, get over that hump of, you know, I feel like that's what AR's goal is, to make people feel like they're in the same room. and trick the brain. And I feel like that's a scary, like, dystopian. It's like a horror novel or like a big tech, you know, tech. There's like a handful of tech novels at the Shoppers Drug Mart, you know, where they're like tech dystopian stuff. Like, this is it, you know. But yeah, I also think that we are, like, you know, I personally work a lot sitting down, like, and I have a job where I'm moving more than other people. I think that in general, most people that I know who are working like professional jobs are, not to say like not professional, but I mean like most people who are working like desk jobs are sitting at a desk and they are, you know, getting things done at a desk. Increasingly, as like automation takes away a lot of the labor jobs, and I think for them they're already not moving, and this is going to be something that you know, keeps you plugged in when you're done work. When I finish work now, I have an increased desire and almost routine at this point to go to the gym, to go do some yoga, try to read this year, which has been one of my bigger goals, so to try to disconnect. And I don't know how I feel about finishing work and then hopping in the A, you know, or having work in an AR and then, you know, switching tabs or switching modes after you're done work to now being in home in AR and, you know, not seeing people anymore because you can just video chat them or whatever with like some weird, you know. I don't like the video chat, like the FaceTime with AR with the Apple Vision Pro is not it yet. And I think that one thing I was reading in like the comment sections of one of those AR videos was the disconnect in spaces being separated. And I found this to be really important. And you probably know this if you're a student. If you sleep, study, play games, socialize in the same space, it becomes increasingly difficult to be productive because you know, if your video games are right there when you're studying, like your brain kind of drifts away and wants to do the you know, the stimulating activity. And yeah, we are. I hope I'm saying that right. Like, the idea of separation of spaces that, like, you know, I go to the climbing gym. That's a separate space. And I go work out there and I get into a mode where my phone's away. And I'm there and I'm working on myself and my body. And I'm, you know, I'm there dedicating that time to movement. And I'm, you know, and I'm also someone who doesn't live in an entirely large space. So my desk and my video games are right next to each other. My desk and my bed are right next to each other. And I think that's more and more common as housing and as space seems to become a premium these days, especially in Canada where we, you know, people are increasingly downsizing, increasingly finding themselves in much smaller places than their parents lived in. Yeah. And I think that as those spaces shrink, the separation of spaces also shrinks. Yeah. I think that this comes back to a thought I've been having recently about the rate of information that can be effectively digested by people. You know, I had this, like, I was reading this book, A Brief History of Progress. And one of the kind of themes in the book is talking about how we haven't evolutionarily, you know, like we haven't evolutionarily evolved too much in the past 10,000 years, but the entire history of what we call modern history has, you know, evolved culturally in the past 10,000 years. So we are advanced apes, right? I'm not going to sit here and say they're monkeys and us are the same. But we're still apes in one way or form. And I don't think that we have the capacity to take in that much information all the time. I don't think that's something that we were ever designed to. And I think it's going to be like, there's going to be a point when it directly harms your well-being, and you need to disconnect. You need to take information at a slower rate. You don't need to watch those TikToks where like you're absorbing information. It's being thrown at you at 100 million miles per hour. And reading that book at a slower pace, allowing your brain to digest one word at a time, is better for you. It's better for your information gathering. How much information do you remember from like a 1 hour session of TikTok scrolling versus 1 hour of reading a book? I can literally tell you the main points of like the last 7 books that I've read, because it takes longer to read them. The information is given to you at a slower rate. But I cannot tell you a single thing in the last hour of scrolling that I did today. I can't tell you a single meme that I watched. And yeah, so I think that we're going to get to a point where we have to reckon with the fact that we're apes. And, you know, until we get a memory upgrade, or I don't know what that looks like in computer terms, you know, if we get a better understanding of the brain, and maybe we can modify that. I think that we are going to need to reduce the information rate and focus on taking in information that we want to take in, and taking it in a way that can be consumed and digested. And I think another, like, you know, kind of the final or the second to last point I should say with like this is that you know, the capitalist tendencies to use these information to farm information, use these technologies to farm information and map out our rooms and stuff. I'm not saying that they will do it, but I do have like privacy concerns with AR and VR devices and the amount of sensors and devices that, you know, we allow corporations, because with all of those, they've stripped away a lot of power that we already have. And they'll find new ways to advertise to us. There's going to be a point when you're going to have access to these technologies. And similarly, like, you know, streaming services, where recently Netflix has now added ads to their plans, which was something that, you know, you got Netflix so you didn't have to see ads on TV. They got enough people onto Netflix. They busted the monopolies or created their own monopoly. Or their own, like, you know, space. And now they have made those basic tiers advertising, because they now need to make that model profitable. And I see the same thing happening with these AR and VR technologies. They're going to eventually, it's going to come down in cost and it's going to be accessible. That's what Meta Quest 3 is all about. Meta Quest 2, like those AR and VR devices are going to become like increasingly better and increasingly cheaper. And then they'll get people on, and then they're going to start advertising to you. They're going to start saying, oh, you need to make this profitable. And it becomes about the bottom line chasing at that point. And I don't like that. And I don't think anyone does. I don't think anyone likes to have privacy violated, and I think some people just have a higher tolerance for that than not. And it's inescapable. Our phones are already doing it. Devices that we have are already in some ways listening or not listening, or, you know, our patterns are being tracked, because we need advertising profiles to be created, because it makes us effective consumers. And I think with this comes the last point, is that we have a lack of control with these things. And things are, you know, going to head in this direction. And technology moves forward. It doesn't stop. I think humans have not been able to stop themselves, because I don't think the nuclear bomb is an example of technology when no one stopped to ask if they should. They always just figure, you know, if they could. And then when they developed it, then it became kind of this weapon, and that's what, you know, the rest of history. So I think there's an inevitability with all of these technologies, And I think in similar ways to how AI and multi-level or a large, what's it called? Large language models, LLMs. I think that's what it's called. Large language models and like ChatGPT. And I think that's what it is, but those types of tools kind of came and then you had to adapt to be able to use these and understand them. I think that AR and VR, maybe not now, maybe not in the next 5 years, but I think the fact that Apple has released this device and they, you know, they're kind of one of our biggest hegemonic landlords in the digital space. There's an inevitability with these technologies and the forward marching of how these technologies will be used in both positive and negative ways. So you just have to embrace it and educate yourself, learn about these technologies. And yeah, so it's bittersweet for me at the end, because I think there's a part of me that's super excited about the technological advancement. But I do think that the abuses, which are now more prominent, because I've seen them used in other aspects of, you know, technological things that we have seen in the past 10 years, whether it be, you know, how iPhones change every year and they were actively destroying their battery life and stuff until recently. And, you know, and how they lock you into, ecosystems and the whole idea of that, just like, you know, we operate and live in this capitalist system, and ultimately it will bring some level of innovation, but it will also create its own set of problems. But yeah, you have to embrace, and you have to move forward with the technology, learn about the technology, find out if it's relevant to the work that you're doing, and see how you can implement it in the correct ways, the appropriate ways. You know, minimize harm, do the most good. And yeah, that's all we can do as patrons of this world. But yeah, that's all I have to say. If you like this other episodes, I'm gonna try to do this more often. I really wanted to record this today. That's why I did it, despite my voice being really quiet. So I apologize for that. And yeah, I'll see you next time. Bye.